Again, my name is Mike Lavender. I'm the senior Washington representative of the Union of Concerned Scientists. UCS was founded in 1969 by a group of MIT researchers and was actually founded in direct response to some of the nuclear issues and nuclear security issues that were going on at the time. Since then, it has grown into an organization founded by just a handful of people into about three, four, five offices around the country. We have about 200 employees. We're currently headquartered in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where we have about 70 people. I'm based in our Washington, D.C. office, where there's about 60 or 70 people, depending on the day. As Jan mentioned, I'm with the food and environment team. So my team really, almost anything under the purview of the Department of Agriculture and sometimes at EPA, we focus on. So that can range from nutrition assistance programs to land conservation programs to food system and food access programs. So we really look at the entire food system and in our work, try to bring that all together into a single vision. And so what I'm going to talk a little bit about today is some of the work that we've been doing around local and regional food systems. And I think there's a really interesting overlap between local and regional food systems and not only sustainable, diversified, and environmentally friendly farms, but also in kind of this conversation that we've all been living through over the past number of months, maybe year plus, really since the election, which kicked it off, is the increasing focus on rural America and the lack of economic options, the lack of economic diversity in rural America, to really try to see if there's a nexus between sustainable, diversified farming, rural economic opportunity, to see if there are solutions there which we can foster through federal policy. Okay, great. So our first slide here, just because I wasn't sure of where everybody's familiarity level was, although I know you've had a number of terrific presenters. This is from the Department of Agriculture, and this actually shows farms, including land and farms, and the average size of the farm since 1850 through through 2016. And you can see that starting in about the 30s, the 1930s, all the way through 1970 or so, there was a huge decline in the number of farms in the United States. It peaked at about 7 million in 1935 and has dropped since then. And actually you can continue to see that it has fallen further and further, even if marginally so. At the same time, in about 1960 or so, the average size of the farm, actually a little bit earlier than that, about 1950, the average size of the farm goes up. So you have people leaving farms and heading to the cities. And at the same time, those farms that are left are continuing to grow and they're expanding and they're expanding. And over time, that has gotten us to the point where an increasing number of the farms that we have on our landscape today are increasingly large farms, thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of acres that dominate the landscape. This could be from row crops to specialty crops. It can really be a number of different things, but the production side of farming is in a fewer number of hands than it's ever been before in the history of American agriculture. Now, this in and of itself isn't necessarily a negative, right? What it really comes down to is how the crop, how the food is produced, what systems, what ecological systems are going into that production, and how it impacts not just the environment, but the communities around it. And so the next stat has always been particularly jarring for me. Since 2007, according to USDA data, nearly 56,000 mid-sized farms have disappeared from the American landscape. So quickly to kind of orient ourselves, I'll talk about what a mid-sized farm actually means, because I think we hear a lot about the small family farm, which is very idyllic, and what you would think your grandparents or your great-grandparents lived on. And then we hear about the big industrialized farm. And those two extremes certainly do exist, but a lot of the production in American agriculture, there's a lot in the middle. In mid-sized farms, switch to the next slide here. Mid-sized farms are typically defined, there is no universal definition. It kind of varies upon where you look, including at USDA. But mid-sized farms typically range between $350 and almost $1 million in gross income a year. And I think this chart, again, from USDA's NAS, from the 2012 Census of Agriculture, I think gives you a good idea. If you look down there on the bottom, less than the vast majority of farms in this country produce only about 3% of crops or of food. And then as you work your way up, under 0.5% of farms in this country produce almost 32% of the goods produced on farms in this country. So there's a huge disparity. But referring to mid-sized farms, there's an interesting nexus there. In this graph, it's represented at $250 to just about $1 million. And at the Union of Concerned Scientists, we have, over the past number of years, increasingly been looking to the mid-sized farm as kind of a harbinger, not only of good, but not only of bad, but also potentially good things. And what can we do if we know that, I have a flickering light here. Focusing on the mid-sized farm is an area where if we can, at least from the federal policy angle, if we can provide the supports either to new mid-sized farmers or mid-sized farmers to expand their operation, that might be a sweet spot where we can not only support farmers in good environmentally sound production, but also support economic activity. So, got a little bit ahead of myself. Why are mid-sized farms so important? First, I think, and most prominently for us, research has shown that areas having more moderate mid-sized farms and a stronger middle class have lower poverty and unemployment rates, higher average household income, and greater socioeconomic stability. Now, it stands to reason why this is true when you think about how farms operate. When you have a small farm, there's typically not a lot of inputs that they're using, whether it's machinery or other, pesticides or whatever they may be using on their property. There's typically not a lot of inputs, so there's not a lot that they're going back into the local community, economically speaking, and driving. On the complete opposite side, large industrialized farms are using a lot of inputs. They're buying a lot of machinery. They're probably hiring a decent number of folks in the area. And they have a lot of other inputs, but they're of a scale at tens of thousands of acres that they don't have to source their tractor or their combine from down the road from their neighbor. They can afford to look elsewhere in the country or regionally to purchase their goods, whatever it may be. So what we find is that mid-sized farms are actually those that invest the most at scale in their local communities. And when we talk about rural communities, a stat that I was reading through the other day, this won't surprise any of you, but there is significant shift away from rural centers toward urban centers and across 1,300 rural counties between 2010 and 2014, about 500,000 people left those counties. Mid-sized farms, playing directly into that, employ more people per acre than large industrialized farms. So it's not just the farm, the farmer, farm family selling their goods. mid-sized farms because they actually employ more people per acre, that's another investment back in the community. And then I think, again, playing off that point, when mid-sized farms disappear, those jobs also disappear with them, and that has a detrimental effect, and it's kind of a vicious cycle playing back into the community. So I didn't actually put a slide in here for this, so I'll leave this up for just a second, but making the connection between mid-sized and small farms and sustainable and diversified farming, the data doesn't, I wish I could sit here and tell you that the data entirely backs up the fact that just because you're a small farmer, you're going to be more sustainable, or just because you're a mid-sized farmer, you're going to be more sustainable than a large industrialized farm. The data doesn't quite back that up. But what we do know is that a lot of the interest from a new generation of farmers, from young farmers, from beginning farmers that are getting into farming small and mid-sized farms, it's those young farmers, it's that new generation that is really interested in thinking ecologically about how they farm, right? And so thinking ecologically doesn't just mean healthy soil practices and maybe using cover crops, but it really means thinking about where you're farming, not just the physical location, but the county and the larger scale, so that you can incorporate different ecological principles into the landscape. Maybe that means planting, agroforestry, planting a row of trees instead of a buffer strip. Maybe that means pollinator strips. Maybe that means certain place buffer strips on your property. So it's these mid-sized farmers who tend to be a little bit younger than some of the larger industrialized farms. It's these folks who are more interested in the sustainable and diversified aspect, broadly speaking. Of course, there's many differences within individuals. So from this point, I kind of want to move into, and I'll bring this back together when we get there in just a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit about the Farm Bill. And I assume that the speakers before have mentioned the Farm Bill, but just for folks who maybe missed those earlier webinars, the Farm Bill is a comprehensive, multi-year piece of legislation that governs almost everything in our food and farm system. And it's up for reauthorization in 2018, and actually the current law expires on September 30th of 2018. So kind of the machinations of writing federal policy for the next 4 to 5 years through the Farm Bill have already started, and there's something we're working on a daily process. And really, this is the best way to influence federal food and farm policy. And so this is one of my favorite pie charts of all time. I don't know how many of you have a list of your favorite pie charts of all time. I don't have one, but this is definitely the top of mine. And this divides Farm Bill, this gives a great representation of how Farm Bill money is spent. So as you can see, this is the 2014 Farm Bill. That is the current law that we're operating under. About 80% of the bill covers nutrition spending. And that's primarily through the SNAP program, formerly known as food stamps. SNAP stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Now, if you look at everything that isn't nutrition, you see commodities. So that's commodity support programs. You'll see 8% to the crop insurance program. Crop insurance receives a lot of attention in broader news, even sometimes breaking out of the Beltway bubble. Crop insurance is a program that's generally structured to pay farmers for losses to their crops due to weather or due to revenue. Although many, including UCS, would argue there are many pitfalls with the crop insurance program, including from an environmental standpoint. About 6% of Farm Bill spending goes to conservation programs. I'll focus on this in just a second, but the other, the 1%, these are the programs that when you're talking about a local and regional local and regional sustainable and diversified food system, that 1% is where we want to focus, because that is where so many of these programs are. So many of the programs that can help connect mid-size or small farmers to wholesale opportunities in local communities are within that 1%. So many programs that offer food access, that offer support to beginning farmers and ranchers, are within that 1%. So we really focus on that 1%, because it's a source of so much good that can be done when we're talking about the food system. I do want to have a brief caveat with regard to the federal crop insurance program. You know, a certain area of our work that we've been focusing on in this farm bill, though it isn't a main component of this presentation, is the crop insurance program, and really trying to improve that program to better incentivize healthy soils practices. So we know that the federal crop insurance program covers about 300 million acres of U.S. farmland. So farmers across the country have collectively covered about 300 million acres with crop insurance policies. But for all that, and for the fact that the program costs about $9 billion on any given year, there is really no metric within the crop insurance formula to incorporate for the quality or the type or the health of soil. And what we know, and I think many folks are coming to understand, is that the health of soil is one of the biggest determinants in whether a crop succeeds or fails. So I think when we're looking at the federal crop insurance program and thinking, how can we improve the program, not only to save taxpayers money and to be more structurally sound, but to be more environmentally friendly and help sequester carbon, we want to look at the crop insurance program and say, let's incentivize, let's offer more incentives to farmers or remove barriers to things like cover crops and practices like that, which, and cover crops aren't necessarily world beaters, but things like perennials, where you get more coverage on the field for a longer part of the year. And I'm happy to come back to that and answer any questions. So, in general, the advocacy focus that we have in terms of federal programs, the vision is, if we want to directly support small and mid-sized farms, we also need to recognize that they can play a role in the economic revitalization of rural communities. At the same time, these very farms are those that are most likely to invest in sustainable and diversified methods. So we need to look at how we can support them on multiple fronts, right? It is not just simply a loan so they can build a new structure, but it's really a diversified approach. So making sure that we invest in agricultural research programs so that they have the tools to succeed on their land in their part of the country, but also on the other side, making sure that we can set up the transportation system and the food hubs to get their products to market and institutional buyers in their local communities. The however here is that there's no silver bullet. And I think that kind of, that's the point I'm trying to make about, there's a lot of things we need to do. There is no single answer where if we achieve one policy, then it's all good and done. And I think many of you from your work would, you know, can appreciate that. And then I think the other thing is that it's not just congressional approaches. The Farm Bill is an incredibly important piece of legislation that, again, governs much of our food and farm system. But there's also things at the administrative level where we need to enforce antitrust policies at the Department of Agriculture and elsewhere that can really help small and mid-sized family farms to achieve better success, and then hopefully implement healthy soils policies and economically revitalize their rural communities and more significant ways. So I'll briefly walk through some of the priorities that UCS has in the upcoming Farm Bill and why I think it's so important to relate them to not only healthy soils, but economic revitalization. I think when we're talking about agricultural research as a scientific organization, we couldn't work in ag and not talk about agricultural research. Investing in agricultural research is one of the most important things that we can do to not only invest in the economic revitalization of rural America, but to invest in healthy soils and carbon sequestration. The anecdote that I like to use is, if you're a farmer in Iowa, you probably have a good sense of what sort of, you know, cover crops are best to plant in your area at a certain time of year, or what's the exact components of your soil. But if you're in New Mexico, or if you're in Maine, or if you're in Oregon, the extent of the research is not necessarily such where you would have all the tools on your extension website to immediately plug in and to have those answers. So investing in agricultural research so that all farmers, small, large, no matter where you are geographically, can have access to that information is incredibly important to invest in. The Local Farms Act. The Local Farms Act is a piece of legislation that's been introduced by several members of Congress. And forgive me for not knowing the acronym of FARMS off the top of my head. It's I can send it in a follow-up. But the Local Farms Act has several really interesting provisions that attempt to solve one of the most basic problems. And I think Klaus, I don't see him anymore, but something that you mentioned early on, which is how do we get the product of small and mid-sized farmers, if they're not going to sell at a CSA or at a farmer's market, what's the next step up from that? And I think a lot of the research that UCS has done has been, let's look at intermediate and institutional markets for local foods. So what does that mean? That means local grocery stores, restaurants, hospitals, schools, post-secondary institutions, prisons, even all of these are facilities that are potential markets for small and mid-sized farmers to sell their products to. Now, not only if those farms can find local institutional buyers that are beyond kind of the scale of a farmer's market or a CSA, not only does that keep that dollar in the community and actually have the effect of reintroducing it in the community, but when you're looking at kind of taking a supply chain and say it exists right now, I was in the grocery store the other day here in Washington, D.C., and there are a bunch of vegetables from California, which is great. Love California, but I'm on the East Coast. What if we shorten that supply chain and think of all the reduced emissions, all the reduced transportation, all the reduced use of fossil fuels that would add on top of the fact that we're already keeping all those extra dollars in the community. So the Local Farms Act has a number of different approaches, but essentially it's looking to invest in farmers, help them find markets in their local areas that they can use and market their products to. The Local Farms Act has been introduced on the House side and on the Senate side. And so we're actively doing work to kind of support both of those proposals and make sure they get included in the Farm Bill and are ultimately enacted into law. FSA loans, this is not the sexiest thing to talk about, but it is critically important. Farm Service Agency loans, a lot of the nitty-gritty work of providing loans to farmers of any scale, really, for structural infrastructure on their farm, for operating loans to buy equipment, FSA loans are incredibly important. So we've been supportive of making sure that they're actually called microloans. I failed to type it in here. but microloans can be very targeted and really support small and mid-sized farmers in keeping their operation running, particularly in difficult years. The Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, in the past, well, I should say this, in 1982, the average age of the American farmer was 50 years old. Today, the average age of the American farmer is just north of 58. So you would expect that, obviously, folks get older, folks grow older, but a huge issue in agriculture right now is finding the next generation of American farmers. And that plays directly into the fact that consolidation continues and the land and the production is in the hands of fewer and fewer folks. So the need to bring along the next generation of farmers, again, who are more inclined and more open to healthy soils practices, which can sequester carbon and keep water cleaner, investing in this program to make sure they have the technical assistance to run their operation is really critically important. And then the final piece, this certainly doesn't have a direct relation to climate, but I think it's important to include because it's such a big component of what we do. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is a program that provides healthy food to low-income families, children, elderly, disabled. It's come under repeated attacks, particularly in this administration, in this Congress, but in the past as well. And support for this program is one of our greatest priorities. And why I bring it up in this context, even though it may seem a bit outside the realm of kind of what we're talking about, is that SNAP is one of the best programs within the federal government at providing economic incentive. Not only does for every dollar that is spent from SNAP, there's $1.80 in economic activity in that area, but can really help lift people out of poverty. And when we're talking about, poverty-stricken communities throughout our country, SNAP plays a critical role in kind of building up the fabric of economic revitalization. So that's a critical program that we are really invested in supporting.
Good. Well, let us thank you again, and let us stay in touch.
Yep.
Well, okay.
Thank all of you for joining, and thanks for having me on.